Throughout time, we humans have told stories. We tell stories to make meaning. We tell them to remember the past. We tell them to share wisdom. We tell them to help people connect with hope when we can't quite seem to find it on our own. This time of year can be a little dreary. We can't be outside as much. It's cold, which means you have to put on big, bulky clothes or be cold. The days are shorter, the nights are long, and it's going to stay that way for a while. And back in the day, this was the beginning of a long winter when food supplies would start getting scarce, sometimes very scarce. And the prospect of long, hungry days, that didn't feel so good. But all that dreariness is part of what makes this a great time to tell stories of hope. And all that darkness makes this a great time to tell stories of light, like Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. We heard a little bit about each of these from our children this morning, a little bit about the stories and the wisdom and the hope that are part of each of these celebrations, a little bit about the meaning. Like Christmas, not really about nailing reindeer to the roof. Well, at least that's not the primary message. Not really even about Santa Claus coming to town with presents that make us happy, although that can be a pretty exciting thought. Just the idea can leave you feeling hopeful about the joys and smiles of Christmas morning. But Santa coming to give us gifts is not the original story or what the holiday was originally about. It is about someone named Jesus who gave a different kind of gift to the people of his time. Not toys or candy, but the gift of helping people feel special. The gift of helping people connect with hope. And Christmas, the story of the miracle of Jesus' birth, is all about hope. It's about how even when you're poor, as Jesus' parents were, and even if you start in the lowliest of places, like a barn, as Jesus did, and even if your family has no status in the community, which his parents did not when he was born, none of this has to matter. Or perhaps the message is even sometimes those who start out from a place that is humble are able to see the most clearly and give the most sincerely. And the story itself, well, it's full of miracles. Not the miracle of flying reindeer, although that's pretty cool, but the miracle of a bright star in the sky, of people called to come from far and wide in recognition of the birth of the holy, of wonder, of possibility. Christians speak of this as a miracle birth, this child of God and Mary, and as you use, we often interpret this story as pointing to the miracle of any birth, of every birth, of the miracle that is life, of hope that comes into the world when any child is born, of the hope that came into the world when you, every one of you, were born. And then there's Hanukkah. Miracle of lights, a story of hope for a people and hope for the way they lived their faith. In 160 BCE, about 160 years before the birth of Jesus, the Jewish people in Jerusalem were told they had to stop being Jewish. They were told to stop praying the way they prayed, told to stop worshiping the God they worshiped, and the ruler of the day felt threatened by them. He wanted everyone to do things the way he said. Although the people knew they had to pretend to obey, they didn't really. For example, after it was dictated that studying the Torah, the Jewish Bible, would be illegal, they made little wooden tops called dreidels and had them lying around during study meetings. That way, when guards came by for surprise inspections, they could pretend to be playing a game, not breaking the law by studying scriptures. Today, the Hebrew letters carved into the sides of the dreidel form an acronym that means a great miracle happened there. And there was this miracle of light, that special flame we heard about in the pageant, this flame that lasted 8 days, even though there was only enough oil for one, a flame to celebrate the winning of a long fight so that this group of people could be free to be who they were. Although the story of Hanukkah is a minor holiday for Jewish people, it is still a reminder to all of us to respect each other, to respect each other's beliefs, and to remember that when an oppressive government tries to tell some people what they can or cannot believe, that we can stand up for them. We can say, that's not okay. And when we do that, we become part of the light, part of the hope. And then there's Kwanzaa, a holiday not quite as old as Christmas and Hanukkah, in fact, relatively new, just over 50 years old. Or you might say Christmas is about the light of hope in every child. And where you might say Hanukkah is about the hope for a people and their faith, you might say Kwanzaa is about a people reclaiming themselves, reconnecting with what's important, and in doing so, claiming new hope. 400 years ago, Africans were brought to this country as slaves. In that journey and upon their arrival, they lost much of who they had been. They had had a way of life. They had had customs, they had had languages and sayings and principles and values, and they lost them when they got here. Kwanzaa is about getting that back. You heard about the seven principles of this holiday in the pageant. And I'd like to tell a story today that lifts up the third principle, Ujima, collective work and responsibility. A big, complicated phrase, hard to picture exactly what that means, but I heard this story from an African-American man by the name of Leo Jones of the UU Church in Washington, D.C., and I thought it described it beautifully. I had heard this story before, but I liked his telling, and I want to share it with you today because it is about togetherness, because it's about children, and because it is a story of hope. Leo himself worked with children for much of his career. He spent 14 years helping schools in low-income neighborhoods. He says it was the most frustrating job he ever had. He came to understand why students, particularly African-American students, fail. Surrounded by the results of generations of poverty, violence, joblessness, hunger, inadequate or no housing, and on, they are facing an uphill battle right from the start. What if we were to do more to help them? And so, that story. Once upon a time, there was a village. There was nothing remarkable about this village. It was simply a village in which people were born and lived their lives and died without fanfare. And once a year, the village played host to a prophet, a very wise man who the villagers loved and trusted. Just as the prophet was about to leave one year, he said to the villagers, "The Messiah is among your children. The Messiah is among your children." The villagers were perplexed. What did the prophet mean? They turned around to ask him more, but he had vanished. Despite their very best efforts, the town people could not understand what the prophet had been trying to tell them, so the chief convened the Council of Elders. There was much debate, but after several hours, the council was right back to the beginning. Why did the prophet say, "The Messiah is among your children"? They had no idea. After several more hours of deliberation, the council finally decided that he probably said it because it was true. But since they didn't know which child was the Messiah, they would test all the boys in the village in hopes of discovering which one it was. Each one did demonstrate something they did very well, but none stood out. None appeared to be the Messiah. Depressed, the chief went home that evening and told his wife what had happened, who responded rather angrily, "So the Messiah must be a boy?" The chief couldn't quite bring himself to tell his wife she might be right, but he did call the council together and told them of his plan to test the girls the following day. They were given the same test the boys had taken with the same results. Every girl did something very well, but none stood out as the Messiah. The chief, despondent, reported his findings to the council and admitted he had no idea what to do next. It was a very serious matter. The prophet was never wrong. The Messiah must be among their children. Finally, they devised a plan. They would treat every child as if he or she were the Messiah. They would give all the children the very best support the village had to offer. No child would be allowed to go homeless or hungry. They brought in the very best teachers. They provided medical care. They gave help to the parents. Everything they could think of was dedicated to the well-being of the children. And an interesting thing happened. Word of their plan, their values, their hopes reached people everywhere. Scholars, artists, scientists, mathematicians, musicians flocked to the village. Everyone wanted to move to that place. Over time, there were so many talented and well-trained people, the village prospered and grew. It became a beautiful city that all of its citizens loved and were eager to support. This is what Ujima means. Our collective responsibility to work toward a world that leaves no one wanting, that harnesses all of our talents for the goal of a just community, a beloved community. Collective work and responsibility may sound like a big phrase, but it is full of hope and possibility, especially when we realize we don't have to do it alone. So let us end with this last hopeful question. The Messiah is among our children, all our children. What will we do?